The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov, very good, thank you. Sounds like you guys are having fun. It was so tiring listening to how it's going. I have to tell you.
Can you imagine? I mean, this is why the guy's exhausted in the morning.
It's not.
I have to say that one of the biggest mistakes a hotel could ever make is offering Howard a pillow menu.
Look, the biggest mistake they could ever make is letting me into the hotel in the first place.
As well.
Anthony, was there an earthquake this morning in Israel?
Not that I have felt. Certainly it wasn't felt here, and I haven't seen any immediate reports of anything. We will keep updated. I mean, we do know that we're expecting the big one very soon, and we have had a series of tremors over time. But
Sorry, I'm misreading a spelling mistake.
Oh,
okay,
my.
This is when news goes bad.
You're talking about an earthquake in the political area, Howard.
Maybe it wasn't an earthquake; it was a irk thing.
What?
I think my niece was asking me if everything is okay, but I read it as earthquake, she misspelled everything.
Oh gosh, that's where things go wrong when people misspell things.
Well, it's not a misspelling. We blame it on autocorrect.
Oh, that's what we do. I don't even know if we still have autocorrect. Everybody blamed everything on autocorrect.
We have autocorrect, Howard. Trust me, we have autocorrect. I've been made a fool of by autocorrect more than once.
Oh, all right. Well, fair enough. All right. Anthony, a single rocket was fired towards Israel yesterday and it landed harmlessly in the sea. Do we know who was behind this attack?
Well, this is an interesting one because, you know, these days when like a rocket is just fired in this way, a single rocket, and it lands somewhere harmlessly, we almost don't even hear about it. Unfortunately, that's kind of not even on our news radar, which is a strange thing in itself. But on this occasion, the IDF has made quite a big deal out of it. Just this one rocket had landed in the sea. It clearly wasn't intended to land in the sea. It was intended to hit land somewhere within Israel. But it didn't. So fortunately, at least, you know, it was harmless and landed in the sea. But since then, the IDF has really responded in a number of ways. First of all, they went about actually identifying the name of the Islamic Jihad commander who is reported to have given the order to fire this rocket. They've publicized his name and they have published the fact that he is the person who is seeking to undermine ceasefire attempts, and that they've really gone out of their way to identify Islamic Jihad and this individual. And so one has to wonder what the purpose of that is, whether they're trying to deflect attention perhaps away from Hamas, whether they're trying to send a particular warning to this guy who they now have within their sights, saying, you know, you're on our radar and we know who you are and we know where you are and, you know, we're watching you. I'm not sure if that was the message. But they've really gone out of their way to identify this person. And they've also reacted by once again reducing the fishing zone that was previously increased off the coast of Gaza. This is the area in which Gaza fishermen are allowed to fish freely without any issues with the patrolling naval vessels that are around the area. Originally, the area was increased from 9 nautical miles off the coast of Gaza to 15 nautical miles off the coast of Gaza, and now in response to the single rocket that was fired, the fishing zone has been reduced to 6 nautical miles. So quite a dramatic decrease in terms of the area, and quite a substantial response to what seems to be something relatively low key, you know, in our terms. So I'm just very interested to watch what may happen next and why it is that Islamic Jihad particularly has been identified and this commander of the Islamic Jihad. They, of course, Islamic Jihad has come out saying it wasn't us, or at least we haven't said it was us. That's the way that they really put things. Not that they're denying it, but they're saying we didn't issue any kind of statement saying that this was something that we fired. And so they're trying to somehow roll back on what exactly happened. But the IDF says that this was definitely intentionally fired and that, you know, this is contrary to what the IDF and the Israeli government has done in the past, where they've said any rockets coming out of Gaza are the responsibility of Hamas. And even though they know that there are renegade groups operating under their own commanders and not necessarily towing the line with Hamas, they've always held Hamas responsible. This, for me, is a departure. They're now saying, we know it's Islamic Jihad. We're not blaming Hamas, and we know who the person is. So it's an interesting change in tactic. And, of course, we're on the verge of the start of the holy month of Ramadan, the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, which is due to start probably on Saturday or not Saturday, probably Sunday or Monday next week to coincide with our Rosh Chodesh. But of course, we know that they don't say exactly when Ramadan will start because they're going to be out watching the moon, and only when the pronouncement is made that the moon is exactly in the new moon phase, then the word will go out that Ramadan has begun. But of course, Ramadan is a very sensitive time. And so obviously we're going to be watching this period carefully, not only because of Ramadan, but we've got Yom HaTzma'ut coming up next week, and we've got a few things going on all at the same time. And so obviously there is a level of sensitivity around exactly what the security situation is. And I see this departure as being very interesting. And I think that it's going to perhaps signal a slightly different approach that the IDF and the Israeli government are taking towards events in Gaza.
Absolutely fascinating. Reports that Amazon has decided to open a local presence in Israel. What have they decided to do?
Yeah, so this is interesting for me because, of course, Amazon being very, very popular in Israel, even though they don't have a local presence, but a lot of Amazon deliveries are being made in Israel. Amazon have got this deal that most things that you order, even though it comes from outside of Israel, most things cost $10 for delivery. So people are obviously packing in, ordering a lot of stuff and getting the $10 delivery special deal, which a lot of people are taking advantage of. And Israelis do love online shopping. And so this has become very popular. Then a few months ago, Amazon gave reason to believe that they might be opening a local presence in terms of setting up an Israeli warehouse. And that was going to be very interesting. But as always with these things, the tax side is very complicated and the logistics are very complicated. And it seemed as if though Amazon was actually withdrawing from that, having originally sent out a message that they were quite interested in setting up a very, very strong local presence with the warehouse and delivery system in place. They then withdrew from that a little bit. And then all of a sudden yesterday or the day before, there was a notice that went around just very low key to some of the Israeli suppliers. They received an invitation from Amazon written in Hebrew to add the possibility of delivery to Israeli customers together with what they're already doing. So these are Israeli suppliers who are currently delivering only outside of Israel. And they, of course, have to agree to do that in order to be accepted onto the Amazon website. Now, all of a sudden and unexpectedly, they're being invited to add Israeli delivery to their website. And they've got this, undertaking that they have to deliver goods within 5 business days. And so, you know, obviously Amazon have got their standards, and now it seems as if though the Israeli suppliers are going to be able to deliver in Israel. So that's, I think, a first stage. And there are people who are saying that this first stage is an indication of how Amazon like to work and what they've done in other countries such as Australia and India and elsewhere, where they start out by inviting local service providers to do local delivery, and then they go on to open up a whole logistics center and perhaps even enable Amazon Prime membership for those people who like to take advantage of that sort of thing. So there are indications that perhaps Amazon have rethought the idea of operating in Israel, and perhaps they've come to some sort of an agreement with the tax authorities with regard to import duties and taxes and how they're going to deal with that. So I think this is an interesting time for Israeli retail. And as a result of that, interestingly, quite a number of the major Israeli retail estate companies with shopping malls as part of their asset portfolios, their share prices dropped on the stock exchange yesterday in response to this. So the market is taking it pretty seriously.
That's incredible. So today, at this stage, if someone in Israel wants to order from Amazon, it's coming from a distribution center either in Europe or America, wherever it would be.
The correct.
Thought here is that correct. There'll be a localized distribution center.
Correct. So obviously, when you have a local delivery, I don't know that there's going to be a local distribution center. I'm not exactly sure what the local delivery means.
I do know
that Amazon do have some warehouses that are not actually labeled as Amazon warehouses, but that they are using in Israel. And that was supposed to be the first step towards them setting up the whole distribution system. Over the last year or so, they've set up a number of these warehouses, perhaps in anticipation of Amazon's entry into Israel. It seems to have, the decision seems to have gone backwards and forwards, but this I think is a major step forward and may well signal, you know, a distribution center and warehouses and, you know, an entire setup being established in Israel for Amazon. Israelis will absolutely love this and they will use it all the time.
No question about that. All right, onto a very serious topic. Holocaust Memorial Day, that begins this evening in Israel, and of course we'll be observing it here as well. How is the day marked?
So the first thing I'd like to say, I mean, it's called Yom HaShoah V'Hagvura. And it's important. The second part is as important as the first part. In other words, it's not only the memorial of the Shoah, of the Holocaust, but it's also to celebrate and to mark the bravery that was associated with the Shoah, because for so long, you know, the Jews around the world and others around the world have associated the Holocaust with out recognizing the bravery that that came along with it for so many people. And it's very pertinent and I think very relevant that we mark today or tomorrow, tonight and tomorrow, as being Yom HaShoah, as opposed to the date in January that the international community marks as International Holocaust Remembrance Day. And while we don't want to disparage that effort to mark the Holocaust in the international community, and we very much respect it, the date that they've chosen is to coincide with the liberation of the Auschwitz death camp, whereas the date that we choose, being tonight and tomorrow, is to coincide with the Warsaw Ghetto uprising. And that's associated with the Gvura, with the bravery, rather than with the sad part. So we are celebrating a lot of the great efforts that went on in order to survive. And those efforts are depicted by the six survivors who've been chosen this year to light the memorial torches at the official ceremony, which will begin this evening at Yad Vashem. Each of the six survivors, of course, now the survivors were all children during the time of the Shoah, and it's more and more difficult to find people who are healthy enough to come along to Yad Vashem and light the torches who are survivors of the Shoah. And very, very soon, we will no longer have survivors of the Shoah to tell their stories. And so it's very good that we have these people, each of them with their own stories, and each of them a great story of success. Because when you read how many children and how many grandchildren, and in many cases how many great-grandchildren these survivors have brought into the world, that is really the success, that is really the mark of the indication that, of course, the Shoah was a failure, and we've risen up again, and now we have in our state more people living than those that were decimated in the Shoah. So I think that's, you know, something that we should bear in mind. And for me, when I think about going into Yom HaShoah, which is, of course, a very solemn day in Israel, and there will be ceremonies at Yad Vashem, and there will be ceremonies and special programs in the schools. And, of course, we will have the minute silence, which will be marked tomorrow, where the whole country comes to a standstill as those sirens blare across the country. We'll talk a little bit more about that tomorrow morning when I chat to you again. But along with that, I think it's important to try and make it relevant to us today. In other words, what lessons do we learn from the Shoah? How can we relate it to what's going on in the world today with regard to anti-Semitism? How can we take those lessons and really make something positive out of it, learn our lessons while remembering what happened? Because it's all about not forgetting, but it's not only about not forgetting, it's also about taking it and making it relevant for the future and for the current time in terms of what we're experiencing. And so, you know, I invite all of the listeners out there to light a candle this evening to participate in the Memorial Day for the victims of the Shoah, even though I know that the International Day is on another day, and I know that many of the Jews around the world like to mark the day in January rather than today. But for those people who are listening and you know, let's come together. This is for the Jewish day rather than the international community. This is our day for the Jews, for Israelis to mark the memorial of the Shoah. And I think it's a very important educational program, particularly for our children, to remember and to make it relevant to what we're experiencing today.
And just a reminder, in South Africa, in fact, the ceremony is on Thursday.
Yes, that's tomorrow.
Okay.
Tomorrow. Yes, it's tomorrow. And, just to tell you, that is going to take place at 12 o'clock tomorrow at West Park. Everybody obviously encouraged to go. They've got, Lord Kevin Shinquin and, survivor Irene Feynman. So, do make a point of attending that ceremony. That takes place at 12 o'clock tomorrow at West Park Jewish Cemetery.